And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I'll be your host for the next 2.5 hours on Bathrop Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor here in Santa Cruz. This time without our customary opening theme song music. But hopefully the show will be cram-packed with lots of interesting information and updates. As usual, we probably won't have enough time, so start stacking up on the phones now. We have phone lines open. Our Free Radio Santa Cruz studio phone line is at 427-3772. Topics we intend to cover today range from a continued update on the latest Evict the Hispanics from the Beach Flats and Call It Affordable Housing hoax, which came up again in strong words and strong passions at the Santa Cruz Land Trust meeting at Loudoun Nelson Center last night, to the sleeping ban protest, which continues to gather petitioners and adherents and potential demonstrators at the table down on Pacific Avenue. We're not quite sure whether it's going to be down there today from 12 to 6, but every day up to now, for the last 10 days or so, that's where it's been. We're also going to have the tireless worker David Silva is heading for campus, even as we speak, UCSC campus, to try to catch students at home to sign the petitions for the decriminalization of sleep and the setting up of safe sleeping zones, as well as to assist in and support the fasters who are on liquids only, some of them, since March 1st. There actually has been a fast since January 14th, but the fast has grown more serious as of March as City Council continues to ignore the plight of 700 to 1,500 homeless people outside. There's rumors of an item coming up on the March 28th City Council agenda on Tuesday night, but rumors are one thing and reality is another, and the rumors don't speak too well of any real strong and inclusive measures that would actually deal with the violence homeless people face outside, the lack of shelter, and just the basic lack of constitutional rights, which every human being is entitled to. David's heading for campus. He invites you to join him. I'm going to invite my producer to call in with a fuller announcement of exactly what and where and when and how David can be assisted in this work on campus today, as I myself have been kind of jamming to get to this show, and we're kind of doing this one by the seat of our pants, but since we have so much material to cover, that shouldn't be a hindrance to us. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we do have a post office box. If you want to reach us there, that's P.O. Box 7507 Santa Cruz, 95061. P.O. Box 7507 Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Email address, for those of you who are in the computer era, frsc@cruzio.com, frsc@cruzio.com. So, hey, join us one way or the other. Drop us a check, drop us a thought, drop us some encouragement, give us a call. We also have a voicemail, 427-4523. That's in case you want to talk to folks in the station, I should say at the station, but don't want to be on the air. So the voicemail again is 427-4523. If you have questions, if you'd like to be a programmer, if you have some criticisms that you don't want aired on air immediately. On the other hand, if you want to bite the bullet and come on the air and talk with us and the rest of the community, and that's what this is really all about, 427-3772 is the line to call. And that's the line I'm at, and hopefully that's the line you'll be calling in at. I guess I'm going to begin today with the Dolphin Lee again. We're going to have hoping to get a call from Julie Lee. Julie is the daughter of owner Vernon Lee, who's owned the Lee Apartments for 20 or 30 years now, and I guess Julie's been managing them for a decade at least, and now is fighting to make sure that the city, which is threatening to seize these apartments by eminent domain in order to build a $12.5 million housing project on them, which ironically will not be affordable for all the people they're displacing, but which they're calling affordable housing in true love me, I'm a liberal style. And a lot of folks have been struggling to bring this issue to the public attention, even as the City Council, in a series of slam-dunk, unanimous 7-1 votes, many of them behind closed doors, pushes this project further and further down the road without any real public process, without any significant tenant input, without any guarantees to the tenants that they will receive full relocation money while the project is being built, and full re-entry guarantee once it is built. None of this is there. It's all a mercy Mercy Charities project. The Mercy Charities decided which project to do. They're designing it, they're building it, and then they're going to run it. And no other groups or organizations have had an opportunity to have any kind of input into this or make any kind of bid for independent management. So it's a scandal. And it's a scandal that's being kind of concealed by SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, the group that put together our current city council and has been supporting them again and again. You read their current newsletter and not a word about really Dolphin Lee in terms of the divisive situation that's developed with the council essentially betraying the memory of Doug Rand, who is actually having a memorial today, for those of you who don't know. He's the activist who died of cancer. I guess it was a brain tumor. I think that would be considered a cancer. And he said there is a memorial for him today at the Veterans Hall at 3 o'clock. I guess some people are invited and some aren't. I guess Scott Kennedy and others have been told, stay away, Doug Rand wouldn't want you. I, ironically enough, was asked to come to the memorial, so I'm probably going to show up there. And Doug and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. Frankly, I thought he had a real blind spot for local Santa Cruz civil rights issues, particularly around the homeless. On the other hand, he was a high-profile activist against the war when the war in Iraq hit. We were together, in essence, in that campaign, although he would never have said so publicly, when we marched in the Capitola Mall demanding that the Bush administration stop the war against Iraq before it started. And a lot of mobilization happened around that issue. And Doug has been responsible for a number of other major actions around the community, some of which I regard as more token than real, some of which I regard as real and important, like his very important fight on the beach south of Laurel, a plan to stop that Canfield Company giveaway from going through. And he must be remembered for his intense, untiring work on that issue, even though he was excluding me from his meetings because he didn't like me or the way I organized. He was never quite clear on why he was excluding me, but he kind of laid down the law on that one. But he did do great organizing around that, if we set aside that one blind spot he had for apparently not being willing to work in an inclusionary manner with some of us. But he did put out information that eventually turned the tide, at least for the moment, in 1998 on the beach flats, stopped the project from proceeding. Now, ironically, of course, an even bigger eviction is happening in the beach flats, and it's being signed, sealed, and delivered by the people who he helped to elect, Tim Fitzmaurice, Christopher Crone, Keith Sugar, and Catherine Byers, who's the sort of the holdover shadow mayor power person on the city council. And so for those of you who want to be better informed, I should be down and probably near the Doug Memorial today, Doug Rand Memorial, with some literature on it. And it brings me to what I'm going to be playing first in terms of the many tapes I have today to play for you. This has to do with what happened last night at the Land Trust. The Land Trust is an organization that wants to get some real affordable low-income housing, not a sort of a special gift for Mercy Charity Housing to and its parent group, what is it, Catholic Services West, I'm not quite sure of the exact name. It's a huge right-wing consortium, Catholic consortium, which likes to buy up hospitals and then eliminate the family planning services. And apparently, I'm told by Scott Graham, does so by getting just such properties as Mercy is being given by the city council, the Dolphin and Lee area, to they get that property after 20 years of renting it out. They get it, is what I understand, in their own, they get title to it. Then they use that as collateral to buy up hospitals, and apparently then their parent organization buys up the hospital and destroys the planning services. This at least is the claim, and if other people have better information on this or contest this, please call in and let me know, but that's my understanding at the moment. Anyway, the issue came up, the Santa Cruz Land Trust, which is talking about finding a way of financing low-income housing in a way that could affect not just low-income people, but people of ordinary means who are being squeezed out of the housing market. And after an hour and a half, Becky Johnson stood up and made the following speech, which I'm now going to play for you.
Hi, I'm Becky Johnson, and I clear your calendars for April 1st, which is a Saturday. There's a fiesta in Beach Flats. It'll be held at the Lee Apartment, 126 Lee Brandt Street. That is one of the two apartments that are in harm's way, the Dolphin and the Lee. that Fred Geiger spoke of earlier. This fiesta is called We're No Fools, and it is April Fool's Day. I'll explain that in a moment. It's hosted by Julie Lee Costanza Gomez, also referred to as a slumlord. I don't think the name fits. She's the daughter of owner Vernon Lee. And for more information, you can call 471-9099 to hear about this fiesta. They're inviting the public down. A Mexican buffet will be served, and you'll get an earful about what's going on.
What time?
I don't have a time yet, but it's a Saturday, and I think it's a daytime event. The Dolphin and the Lee Apartments in the Beach Flats currently has 200 or more people. Many of them are long-term residents of Santa Cruz. The City Council and the Redevelopment Agency, in their wisdom, have decided to relocate the tenants at great public expense, tear down 63 units of currently habitable and affordable housing, and build a $12.5 million, 50-unit affordable housing, so quote, affordable housing project. This would result in a net loss of affordable housing to the city of Santa Cruz, and it would use up 5 years of redevelopment money in the process. Can you imagine how far $12.5 million would go if it were used for a community land trust? Despite numerous promises of preference that current residents will qualify for the new housing, many will not. Past evictions, drug convictions, legal status will be a bar for those people qualifying for the new housing. If even one member of a household is an undocumented resident, that household will not qualify for the new housing unless that family member leaves. Where are 200 mostly Spanish-speaking, low-income people going to be relocated to? Currently, they are paying between $415 a month and $750 a month. Wow. Have you looked at what rentals cost in Santa Cruz lately?
Yeah.
Despite repeated requests, city council members have not explained why they won't build on vacant land next to the Dolphin and the Lee, land that is currently zoned residential, but belongs to Charles Canfield and the Seaside Company. If we're going to eminent domain to acquire property, why not use the Seaside Company land? Doug Rand would roll in his grave if he knew what was being planned for the Dolphin Lee. Affordable housing in Santa Cruz is the number one concern of most residents. The horrible situation facing the Cypress Point residents only underscores that need. Lack of affordable housing leads to homelessness. Please educate yourselves quickly on this one. The lives of 50 families of our neighbors are at stake. Call the City Council, 420-5020. Urge them to halt the Dolphin Lee project or change its direction. Call the Beach Flats Neighborhood Association at 423-0170. Or you can also call 423-HUFF. I have extra copies of the articles about the Dolphin Lee project here, and if anyone needs one, we can provide an extra copy. Thanks.
And that was video journalist Becky Johnson, who also authored a story on the Dolphin Lee in the last issue of Street Spirit, available at your friendly downtown Spring Mobilization Against the Sleeping Band table in front of the Del Mar Theater. Actually, I'm told that there actually will be someone going down there today and covering it. It ain't going to be me, I can tell you that. And we need lots of people to cover that table, which has been doing fine work from 12 to 6 every day, signing up people for large protests. We're hoping to get some sort of Seattle-style action going here, although I'm sure our reach exceeds our grasp in this situation, but you've got to try. The sleeping ban, again, is a $54 crime, which affects all people who have no houses and who have to sleep at night in the city limits. No houses, hotels, or rooms. You're not allowed to sleep in a vehicle, outside, or on much public property, much private property as well, actually, even with the permission of the owner. You are allowed to sleep in a vehicle if you have If you're in a church parking lot, only 3 vehicles to a parking lot. In a business parking lot, only 2 vehicles to a parking lot with the written permission of the owner. And for 3 calendar days per month, only in the driveway of a resident with the resident and the owner's permission in that particular house. So it's pretty slim pickings for 700 to 1,500 homeless people. There are shelter spots, I should say floors, spaces on the floor for less than 175 people a night, and that will drop to about, well, exponentially to less than, probably less than 30 or 40 after April 1st when the armory closes. There's a plan on the boards to do something on March 28th, like open up the parking lot of the armory to view for vehicles to park in, but only for a select group of people in vehicles, women with families, disabled, elderly folks, and it will not in any way affect the majority of homeless people, many of whom don't have vehicles, and many of whom are not women, disabled, or elderly, all of whom face violence, criminalization, and fines at night. It's wrong. We know it's wrong, and David Silva's up on campus today trying to get petitions signed. If you can't meet him up on campus, give a call to Huff at 423-HUFF. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, group I work with, at 423-4833. That they can certainly put you to work, and we'll find stuff for you to do to change the situation. And if you can't do that, come down to the table in front of the Del Mar Theater on Pacific, just a little this side of Cathcart, and you can do some work there. I'm hoping to get a call momentarily from my producer, who had some corrections on the stuff that I said about the Dolphin Lee. She's the expert on this. And also some updates on David Silva's work today on campus and how you can be a part of it.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, hi. Robert, this is Becky calling in.
Mm-hmm.
And David Silva will be at the Health Care Center at the UCSC campus between 1 and 1:30 today.
Cowell Health Care?
Cowell Health Care, the Student Health Care Center,
mm-hmm.
at the UCSC campus. And mm-hmm. so students can meet him there and pick up petitions to circulate for that the new initiative to repeal the sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great.
Yeah, and I did have a couple comments about first the organization that you were searching for was Catholic Healthcare West.
Catholic Healthcare West, yeah.
And they have been buying up hospitals up and down the West Coast, and one of the first things that they do is they eliminate all the family planning facilities.
Well, that's because they got rid of them, man.
Yeah, I guess so. And another problem with Catholic Healthcare West is they're anti-union, and so that has posed a problem. The other thing is that you were talking about that the when Mercy Charities acquires a property, that it reverts to them in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That may or may not be accurate. It varies from project to project. Some are 20 years, some are 30 years, some are in perpetuity. Those have to do with what the contract is set up at the time of the sale. However, the title does transfer to Mercy Charities Housing very early on in the process. It doesn't take 20 years. It's paid off in 20 or 30 years. Is why that becomes an issue up the road. And so we need to be vigilant if the city is going to be proceeding with this project, which I have every indication that they are, that when they do get around to writing that, that they not include a provision that allows Mercy Charities to free reign about what to do with the property, say after 20 or 30 years. It needs to be affordable housing in perpetuity, and so we'll see if that happens.
Well, you spoke last night at the, I guess, Santa Cruz Land Trust.
The Community Land Trust dinner that they had at Loudon Nelson Center.
$10 a plate, and prepared by India Joe Schultz, who actually has been doing most of his cooking for the homeless table free. If you want free food, come on around to the homeless table, although I don't know if we're going to get any today. We'll see about that.
Yeah, and they had a good turnout. Nearly 100 people were there last night.
Now, a lot of them heard talk about the land trust. Do you want to summarize what was said in that meeting? Do you think you can do that, or is that kind of too big an order?
Oh, well, I mean, the community land trust is a very solid concept that has worked in Burlington, Vermont, and a couple other cities, according to the film that we saw last night, where a nonprofit organization is set up called the Community Land Trust, and the land trust purchases a property. The trust owns the land, and individual members of that trust can buy the house or apartment or the dwelling that resides on the land. So a person owns the house, but they don't own the land under it. So that greatly increases the affordability of that property to that person. And there are some restrictions on that they have to be owner-occupied dwellings. They can't be sublet to other people. So there's no absentee landlords allowed in these land trusts. And they can be willed to their children. They can be sold, but they cannot really be sold. You can get, if you sell it, you can only really get the money out of it that you paid into it plus a cost of living allowance. So there really is, it takes the commodity nature of housing out of that particular project. And apparently Burlington, Vermont has been doing this since the early 70s and have gotten property after property into a community land trust. And they have dramatically changed the housing situation in that city so that affordable housing is quite available, unlike here.
So there are no such land trusts here in Santa Cruz?
None that I'm aware of now. However, the organization that met last night at Loudoun has formed, it has a healthy membership, and they're proceeding. They're just simply looking for a site at this point in time.
Well, you kind of were there for much of that meeting. I know there was a council member, Christopher Crone, in attendance, who actually stood up and spoke, and I have been rather critical of Christopher on a number of occasions for his, well, failure to push down the sleeping van publicly in the last year, although he did author an amendment, I guess, a year and a half ago that declared sleeping was a right, but at the same time kept sleeping a crime. Interesting kind of counterpoint. He has also refused to put rent control on the ballot, or moved to do that at City Council, declined to do that, even though Bob LaMonica, when he was pressing his rent stabilization initiative, asked Crone to do that. And he finally, of course, is most notoriously the very issue you were talking about, in the Dolphin Lee affordable housing hoax, as I call it. He has voted unanimously, 7-0, to continue to push this forward railroad track, speed style, down the track, right over the tenants. And what was your impression of Crone's statements at this session? Does he seem to be, you know, changing his tune? Is he actually going to take some stands that might have some courage? And I have to say courage, it sounds like I'm attacking him personally, but maybe it's not courage. Maybe he genuinely believes that he shouldn't be pressing these issues publicly, but for me at least makes some more sense. How did you see his role in this meeting?
Well, he certainly was supportive of the Community Land Trust as a concept. He did bring up a copy of yesterday's Santa Cruz Sentinel that had the article about the apartment dwellers at Cypress Point who have just gotten the bad news that all 250 units have been purchased by a corporation in Texas, and anybody who doesn't have a lease is going to have to move out and renegotiate whether they're going to be allowed back in, and rents are going to be shooting up dramatically at that particular location. So Chris brought this paper and showed, you know, people, you know, how dramatic the problem is, but he sort of failed to follow through and suggest what he might be willing to do at the council to curb this trend, which in my mind is that he needs to introduce rent control. And he stopped short of that, despite even, I did hear a few people saying, well, what about rent control? Because, you know, I mean, a land trust is just for one piece of property, and the Dolphin Lee is also one piece of property. But the problem is citywide, and only rent control really could have an effect on curbing this trend where housing costs are just out of sight, and a great section of the community of Santa Cruz will not be able to afford to continue to live here if this trend doesn't change.
Well, I saw you were having a few conversations with Crone in the course of the evening. Did you learn anything more about his plans around Dolphin Lee? Is he going to guarantee perhaps a personal space? I know Crone himself is a landlord, and one of his buildings for all these folks are going to be evicted, or is he making any statements about offering to actually turn around and introduce rent control, or even at least have it?
Oh, no, I haven't heard anything like that. When I did overhear him talking to one other community member who was asking him about the Dolphin Lee, and he repeated that oft-told line that it's substandard housing. However, we have looked at the code enforcement record that's on file with the city of Santa Cruz for the Dolphin, for the Lee, and for the Pink Palace property across the street from the Dolphin and the Lee.
Which actually all constitute together the Dolphin Lee project.
The total 63 units that are slated to be destroyed to make way for this Mercy Charities so-called affordable housing project. And none of the units have been red tagged. There's the types of repairs that have been requested by the city have either been made or they're cosmetic. Absolutely no indication from any of that data that these units of housing need to be destroyed. And yet that is what Chris Crone is repeating, and I guess more prominently Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice, who has made some very strong statements that those are unhealthy places and not fit places to raise children, and other really extreme, I think, biased comments against the lifestyle of the people that currently live there.
Well, I know that Julie Lee was on last Sunday, and she presented us with a document that she asked the City Council, the Redevelopment Agency, to sign and pass as a law that would guarantee to all the tenants, regardless of how stupid the idea is of destroying more affordable housing to produce less of it, even if it is of higher quality, instead of just producing more of it and then maybe rehabbing what currently exists up to better standards, which would be cheaper and make more sense, it would seem to me. But even doing this without any kind of public process, so we don't get to see the pros and cons of all the different cases. And Julie Lee was present with this document. She showed it to us, and she hasn't been able to get a word from Crone. And I asked Crone, I guess, almost a week ago now, last Monday, if he would give us a schedule of where, just how far down the track this Dolphin Lee thing is, how close to being acquired is the property, what kind of votes are going to be coming up at council. And, of course, I haven't heard from him, although I got to say, Crone is the only member that holds open kind of orientation for the public meetings before the day before every city council session. He has to be commended at that for that. It's at 6 o'clock at the Pergolesi the day before the regular second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. But he has not shown up on this one, and I know that I got rather upset with Christopher Crone because I think he made some misstatements last night. I was pointing out that before I go on, I think you may want to say something here. I don't want to.
Yeah, I don't know which of those seven things you mentioned you wanted
to
respond to.
Go ahead.
One thing that's really bothered me is the lack of public process regarding this Dolphin Lee project, where on February 19th, 1999, I believe it was, there was a meeting at the Beach Flats Community Trailer, where the council members claimed that there really was no Dolphin Lee project and that they were just there to hear what the people in the community are looking for in ways of improvements. But, of course, there was a Dolphin Lee project. The staff were working on it, and no one there at that meeting said, gee, could you condemn our home, destroy it, and build affordable housing on the site? You know, nobody asked for anything remotely close to that as a solution to the problems that people had, which were concerns about traffic in their neighborhood and drug dealing that is going on more or less unchecked. People did have some concerns about that their refrigerators and stoves weren't working in some of the units at the Dolphin, but those hardly constitute destroying the property to make. Now, a proper public process would be to set up project area committees, and I believe that is required under redevelopment law, and a project area committee has to be set up at the beginning of the planning stage, and it has to include members of the people who would be most likely affected, which are the tenants of the Dolphin and the Lee. That was completely bypassed. A project advisory committee was set up. Project advisory committee was set up somewhat down the line, and that, which I don't think that's even been totally instituted yet, and that has the types of organizations that would be involved in that are really kind of suspect, like Dominican Hospital and Holy Cross Church, organizations that would be very favorably disposed to anything Mercy Charities Housing might be planning on doing. Groups stacked with a bunch of yes men, they're supposed to advise them on it. Now, just recently they set up a project relocation committee, and this is the first time that the city has actually asked residents of the Lee and the Dolphin to sign up and be members on this committee. So they're basically, their input is asked when they're asked how they can relocate themselves out of the neighborhood. And it's just a sham of a public process, really.
Well, I know that I tend to get to feel it's important when council members show up in public places, particularly on affordable housing issues, and that's what Crone was doing at this land trust meeting, that they be held to account for their votes, particularly their recent votes in city council, and to explain to those around them how they could have the nerve to be politicking, as Crone was, at this session when he himself is continuing to vote to evict people and to pay no attention whatsoever to the considerations you and others have raised on this issue. What was your sense about that?
I think Chris Crone would like to talk about areas where he feels more confident in, and in areas that are more controversial or where people have criticism of them, he would prefer to just shut down any kind of comment on that. And so he sort of picks and chooses areas that he will meet with the public on.
Well, I know I asked him, I kind of introduced him to a few members there, and I said, in rather confrontational style, I admit, Chris, how can you explain to this man why you voted 7-0 to railroad ahead this project when it's going to disperse so many people, it's going to have such a almost racist effect on people who are, all of them Spanish-speaking, many of them illegals, all of them poor, and he wouldn't even acknowledge, as I recall, that he had done those 7-0 votes.
No, he didn't.
He just turned away. He wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't say that he had voted every step of the way for this project. And I'm not sure. There was a closed session that took place, I believe,
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming that he did that vote too, or he would have said, "No, I didn't. I didn't do that," because even though closed sessions, what they discuss is usually confidential, I don't think that their votes are necessarily confidential, contrary to what Michael Rodkin used to say about votes around food not bombs and arresting the food servers and so forth. So I know that it was ironic that the Santa Cruz Land Trust, the boss there, the chairman of the board, I guess his name was PJ, he was so concerned with the rather vigorous discussion I was having with Crone, or actually almost a one-sided discussion, because Crone was doing his best to avoid talking about anything on the subject. He later, I guess, he got into a kind of an argument with me, but then he later got into an argument with you, which I found kind of interesting. Did you want to comment on that?
Well, he had witnessed you confronting Christopher about these votes on the Dolphin Lee and then his proceeding to go ahead with this project from hell. And you kept asking him, you know, had he voted for it? Was he continuing to vote for it? And Chris just refused to acknowledge you and was trying, you know, walking away. And you did raise your voice slightly. I'm sure two or three people nearby probably heard. But this was, of course, after the event was over. The speeches had all been given. The mics were turned off. And people were just sort of mixing and chatting amongst each other. It was a fairly high noise level in the room already at that point. And the organizer, PJ, you said his name is? I really didn't catch his name.
Yeah, PJ.
Became very upset and thought that you had gone overboard, that you were disrupting the event, and that he needed to take measures. And he suggested that he would go before the board and have you banned from future meetings. And I told him that I thought that your comments were entirely appropriate when you consider the totality of circumstances, and that the best time to confront city council members is in public places among their constituents, so that everyone can see their position and see how they're answering. And he's saying, well, but not at this event, not at ours, and you know, we have to keep things sort of polite and civil. And then he said that he would take measures to go before the board and see that you and I were both banned from future events. And I said, well, you want to ban me too? I said, I didn't speak up. I didn't, confront him. I just told you that I thought that Robert Norris was appropriate in his comments, and now you want to ban me?
So, well, you got to watch the company you keep there.
I guess so. Well, you know, I thought about it, and would people rather be lied to in polite, civil tones, or would they rather hear the truth, even if it's shouted?
Well, unfortunately, it seems that the answer is usually the first, unless you can get to the second by maintaining that loud volume long enough for people to begin to hear and wake from their somnolence. I want to thank you for calling in. Is there anything more you want to add? Some more perhaps screw-ups that I've done that you want to clarify here?
No, I have no further corrections, but perhaps we'll hear from some more members of the public about this Dolphin Lee fiasco.
Sounds good.
And remind people, April 1st, We're No Fools at, 126 Lee Brandt Street. I'm sorry I don't have a time for that yet, but it is Saturday, and I believe it's kind of a daytime event, and a Mexican buffet will be served. And those you can come and meet with the owners and residents of the Dolphin and the Lee, the people who would be displaced.
You can check out some of those squalid apartments.
Yes, I guess you could.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Talk to you later. Thanks for calling in.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, all Norse, all talk, all the time, at least for 2.5 hours. We have had some technical difficulties, so the musical section of our show, we are asking the audience to provide. I may do a tune or two of my own, singing Love Me, I'm a Liberal. There's actually going to be some Phil Oakes tunes today at the Doug Rand Memorial, which again is at 3 o'clock at the Vets Hall. Doug Rand and I shared a love for the music of Phil Oakes, and that's actually the reason that Mark Levy called and invited me to come to this Vets Hall thing. I'm actually interested in making sure that people stand up to make sure that Doug's legacy really is respected, at least insofar as his legacy involved protecting the rights of people in the Beach Flats, because I think that really was his crowning achievement, and that I have most respect for the work he did around that issue. Again, independently of his desire to exclude certain people from that work. Still, it was good work, and it was done, and hopefully we will be attempting to stop the politicians who are now twisting it around and turning it back and essentially denying what he did, and yet using essentially his memory as a platform to proceed with their own affordable housing hoax schemes, as I call the Dolphin Lee Mercy Housing Project. Well, on Thursday, the The barefoot eighth member of the city council, as Scan so fondly calls him, Scott Graham, called in right before the show was over, mentioning that there was a meeting of the Planning Commission on Thursday evening, and he invited people to come to that because they were going to be discussing some important issues, mainly the plan to allow building inspectors, actually, to allow building inspectors to not wait for a complaint before coming in with their red-tagging book, but to just observe from the outside, and if they see anything that might be wrong, they can come in without a warrant. This looked like an unnecessary extension of the police state, and he went to the Planning Commission to talk about it. We're going to hear an interview which covers a number of topics that Scott discussed. He's always in the thick of it, particularly in the thick of sort of the bureaucratic legal political process with these obscure meetings that I never go to and rarely hear about, and the Sentinel doesn't report much. But here, at least, we have our own person inside who is interested, and or you might say his own person. He's got his own point of view, but it's always interesting, and we're going to be listening to him. However, if you want to say something on what we've been talking about, the right to housing, the right to sleep, the right to have basic civil rights, even if you're a low-income person, give a call to 427-3772. We can interrupt this tape to take callers, and hopefully you're listening out there and you want to say something. Here's a quick update on the Planning Commission hearing on Thursday night. Scott Graham was there along with Fred Geiger, Susan Martinez. We're doing this update on Friday night, the night after that hearing, March 17th. But Scott, you were encouraging people to come when you called into Free Radio because up for grabs or for a vote was an issue about expanding kind of rigorous code compliance activity throughout the city to what has, I guess, previously been limited to the beach flats.
Right. Right now, in the beach flats and also the Lower Ocean neighborhood, because it started in the beach flats and they expanded it two years ago into the Lower Ocean neighborhood, they have this heightened standard of code enforcement, which doesn't need a complaint for them to go in and do an investigation on a property.
Interesting, because I've learned from Linda Garner, the Lower Ocean and the beach flats inspector, that they have never had a complaint from inside the Dolphin and Lee apartments, and that all complaints have come from people who visited or outside.
Well, see, that's the same problem that happened to the house that I lived in. Nobody that lived in that house ever complained about it. None of the people that visited it ever complained to the building
inspector. What about David Scott?
He didn't call the building inspectors either. The police called the building inspectors on us because one of the people in the house was on probation. The police raided the house three times because under the probation order, they were able to search his bedroom plus the common areas of the house without a warrant. So they raided the place three times, suspecting to be able to bust everybody in the house on any of those three occasions. Never did they bust anybody. They weren't even able to rearrest the guy that whose search clause they were exercising. So that pissed them off. The third time that they did this was 2 days before the guy got off probation, which meant 2 days after that they would never be able to search the house again without a warrant.
It must have been very frustrating for them.
And so as they were leaving, they turned around and announced to the household that they were going to turn the house into the building inspectors, that they noticed multiple violations of the building code.
Well, certainly this must have encouraged you because you want the landlord to fix up those problems, right?
Well, actually, our rent was considerably lower than most rent in town. Our house was $550 for a three-bedroom house, which we converted into a five-bedroom house. We converted the laundry room and the dining room into separate bedrooms. So we had a five-bedroom house for $550, which was quite a deal in
the
town.
Surely Tim Fitzmaurice, seeing this house, would have denounced this as a kind of the squalid living conditions that we must not let exist, as he, in fact, has pointed out in the Dolphin and the Lee apartments.
Right. Well, he doesn't understand that was my home, and I was always glad to get there at the end of the day.
But surely you'd be much more pleased with the Mercy Charity's affordable housing project down the road.
No, I would not want to live under concentration camp type rules. If you live in one of these housing projects around town, you're subjected to the rules that you don't have if you rent from a private landlord.
Give us an example of that.
You can't drink outside. You can't work on your car in the driveway. You can't, you know, there's all sorts of
smoking
rules.
Marijuana?
Smoking marijuana is against the rules and regulations unless you have a medical marijuana card and are willing to fight for your rights to be able to exercise your medical marijuana rights.
So these are actually concerns that have never been brought up in the discussion of the Dolphin Lee Mercy Housing hooks, as I call it. That, I mean, concerns have been brought up with the question of, will immigrants, illegal immigrants, be able to get in? Will they be able to even be relocated? You know, will people with detentions and unlawful detainers and felonies be able to get in? What you're pointing out is, even if one gets past all this, the living conditions are likely to be more oppressive than those, shall we say, that are allowed by private owners.
Law here in California is that once you rent a property from your landlord, it's basically your possession. As long as you continue to pay your rent, they have no say what you do on your property. Even if you're doing something illegal, if it can't be viewed from off the property, you can do that. Mm-hmm. Nobody has the right to stop you. And in these housing projects, it's not just here in Santa Cruz, it's nationwide. They have rules and regulations that the tenants have to abide by. It's much like being in a condo association or something, where they have rules and regulations, and if you don't meet the rules and regulations, they kick you out. I know at this place down here, Aneria's Lagoon, run by Mercy Charities, they have a demerit system where if you get written up, you get so many demerits, and once you get so many demerits, you're out of there.
Well, wasn't this kind of an encouraging thing to help our young people live better?
I think it's like if you get 6 demerits within a 3-year period, you're out of there. So in other words, if one of your neighbors doesn't like you, they can keep on complaining about you, get you written up. If they can somehow justify their complaint and get you thrown out of the place.
Interesting point.
Because most of these housing projects have rules that are so oppressive that normal people would break them constantly all day long.
Well, I hope you can get us a set of the Neri Lagoon rules, because I think that would be an indication of what might be in the cards for the Mercy Housing Dolphin Lee replacement.
Well, that would be a good idea to get a hold of those rules just so we can then translate them into Spanish, just so people will know what they're getting into. Okay, you can go from living here in this apartment and doing whatever you want outside and inside to having to live by these rules.
Let me ask you. So you are probably going to then kind of pose as a prospective tenant for the Neri project just to get those rules. What kind of disguise do you intend to wear?
Actually, I have a Robert Norris costume at home that I wear quite often. And I come up and badmouth the city council all the time when I'm wearing it.
I blush. So getting back to the Thursday night hearing of the Planning Commission, you were in the audience checking out this new, I guess it's the staff cooked up a plan to expand the powers of the of building inspectors citywide to check out code violations without complaints by tenants. You just gave us this rundown how the police have used that against people who were in one of your previous houses.
And the police also used that same thing on Campbell Street. The Campbell Street house was not turned in by the people that live there. The people that live there did not call the building inspectors and say, this house is crappy, our landlord won't fix it, come in and inspect it. No, the police, once again, because there was the police labeled it, quote, a party house, and there was also this, I believe, renegade radio station operating out of the back.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, in fact, that we're talking about, the house at Campbell Street that was, I guess it was demolished, and the people
who were public nuisance.
Public and private nuisance, and numerous members of the radio collective and people who lived there, I guess, had a last stand on the roof in I guess it was in the summer of 96 when the house was torn down, and actually the landlord illegally refused to pay relocation expenses and was forced to do so later by Judge Stevens, interesting, situation.
Well, but he only had to pay relocation to those people whose names were on the lease. He didn't have to pay it to the people that were also living there but were not on the lease.
Right. Good point. But getting back again to the Thursday evening discussion, your fear was that there would be kind of a quick vote on this issue, that there would be some kind of recommendation to city council that there be a real change, or could they have made that change themselves?
Well, the planning commission is only an advisory body. They can't, you know, finalize anything like this. They just make...
They set it up.
Yeah, they set it up for the city council. They review it, and then they say, yes, this is good, or no, we don't like this, and send it on to the city council. But on this particular item, a number of the commissioners were so...
Appalled
by the draconian measures that were being...
contemplated?
Put forth before them, that they had so many questions about it that they actually want the planning department to rewrite what they were doing to actually, you know, show what exists now, the law that exists now, as compared to what they're doing now.
And why the changes were necessary.
Why the changes are necessary. And, you know, a major portion of this is setting up a hearings officer, which will be an administrative hearing that if you get cited for a code violation, right now, if you get cited for a code violation and don't fix it, the city can impose sanctions on you, but the only way they can collect any money from you is to take you to court. And by the admission of the head building inspector, when they do that, the courts usually don't take these cases very seriously and just do minimal fines on the landowner.
Instead of $2,500 a day, it's $25 a day or something?
Well, usually instead of $2,500 a day, it's just a $25 fine. They just say $25 fine. That's it. Not per day, just all inclusive. And so they're setting up this hearing officer so that they can impose these fines, have a mechanism to impose these fines and collect the funds. Mm-hmm. And
a little fundraising for the... Who is that, for the city, or who?
The planning department. And because the planning department is supposed to be self-supporting. The fees they charge the prospective building builders and developers are supposed to pay all their staff costs and all this kind of stuff. Well, after the earthquake, the planning department got huge in this town. We have one of the biggest planning departments in the state.
How many people are in it?
I'm not sure. I think there's over 24. Mm-hmm. And, I mean...
They've got to find some work for these poor people.
Right. I think one of the few cities in California that has a larger planning department than we do is Los Angeles. Well, San Francisco has a smaller planning department than Santa Cruz.
Well, I think we should be proud.
And so what's happening, to my mind, is that 10 years after the earthquake, most of the mall has been rebuilt. There isn't a lot of need for all these extra people.
You're using the words rebuild very loosely, of course.
Right. Well, it hasn't been it's been retrofitted. But anyway, there isn't a great need to have this huge planning department anymore. So in order to continue to fund itself, they're going to try to raise $500,000 a year fining people for building code violations that they drive around town and find instead of having it be complaint-driven. You know, like if you're building an addition on the back of your house, your neighbors may call on you and say, hey, the Joe Blow next door to me is building a two-story addition on the back of his house, mm-hmm. and then they come out and check it out. But now, if this new thing goes through, it would be that the building inspectors would be driving around town looking for violations. So they could go past a house one day and see a cracked window in the front of the house. Mm-hmm. If they go by 72 hours later and that window is still cracked, then that violation hasn't been fixed in a timely manner. And that's grounds for them to inspect the property.
Don't they have to notify the person, or do they just have to?
No, they under this new rule that they would be able to enter the property mm-hmm. to check for suspected violations.
I see.
Without a warrant. It would be a warrantless search of a property.
Well, I think this is sort of an admirable addition to the new police state that's developing here in Santa Cruz. I don't see what your problem is.
Well, the biggest problem is that probably the first thing to get targeted will be all these accessory dwelling units, which are basically garages that have been turned into a second house behind someone's house. And a lot of people on marginal incomes live in such units. And there's the planning department estimates there's anywhere between 3 and 5,000 of them in Santa Cruz. And they could go march around town and shut every one of them down.
There are great jobs for these people in Modesto and in Iowa, I'm told. In fact, somebody came to the sleeping band table in front of the Del Mar today, and was just actually the day before yesterday was saying that, you know, we really have to move all these homeless people to Iowa where there is housing and work.
Well, I mean, let's get the Chamber of Commerce in Boise to come down here and start recruiting homeless people. Maybe Mike Schmidt could get together with the Chamber up there, get a bunch of recruiters and send them down here. That would be a great idea. If they could actually guarantee these people work and housing, I'm sure that a lot of them would go take them up on it. But I don't think a lot of people are going to go up there just on somebody say so. But if somebody actually came down from Boise or
from Omaha,
Idaho Falls or wherever, uh-huh, and said, hey, we got these jobs, we've got these houses, you know, sign right here and they're yours.
We'll relocate you.
Yeah, a lot of people will even pay your transportation costs to get to Idaho. I think a lot of people would take, you know, there's not all the homeless people are just shiftless, lazy individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them are just victims of circumstance.
Well, it kind of reminds me of Grapes of Wrath, the film.
Must be a police chase.
You know, it's interesting. I think they're approaching you. Here they come. Here they come. The squad car, shall we follow them? We could jump in the car. And looks like there is some police activity. I don't know if you knew this, Scott, but yesterday around noon, I saw no less than 20 motorcycle police officers in formation driving down 17 onto right past Denny's as I went through that intersection. And I just didn't know what it was. It was, it happened to be the Clinton funeral or something. I wasn't sure what was going on.
Huh. I haven't heard about that either.
I didn't know. First, I thought it was a gang of bikers.
Well, I know once a year, motorcycle cops from all over the state come to Monterey, and they have this competition.
Competition?
It's sort of like a motorcycle rodeo competition.
Sort of 42 bullets, and who, how many people can we... I don't wish to, of course, besmirch the memory of those four fine officers who recently were acquitted of the shooting of Amadeo Diallo.
Right, but I don't think they were motorcycle officers.
No, probably not. Undercover, at least they were.
You shouldn't besmirch our chips.
Good point. I take that back. I know, is Officer Carey a motorcycle officer? I don't know.
I don't know either.
But they probably have a few notches on their belt.
Sergeant Vogel sometimes rides a motorcycle.
Sergeant Vogel is actually one of the few police officers that I have an enduring relationship with. But I want all those police officers to know out there that we are just good friends. and Sergeant Vogel, don't take it to heart, actually. Sergeant Vogel actually was called upon to arrest me recently at a city council meeting.
He wasn't
about a month and a half ago.
Arrest you. He was told to lead you out of the council chamber.
Can't be led out of the council chamber involuntarily unless you are arrested. If a police officer gives you an order to leave the chamber, that's considered an arrest. It's not involving an arrest record, but it is technically an arrest. For example, you're liable to a search during that period. If you resist or if you refuse to obey the officer's orders, it's a crime. So in fact, it is an arrest. Your liberty is being limited. Just a little technical lesson for you.
Yeah,
Scott.
I don't know if it would be considered an arrest or a temporary hold.
Well, I suppose there's a sort of a line there. Usually you would ask the question, am I under arrest? That's the key question. And I probably should have asked that question to get some clarification. Also have the audience get some clarification as to the Mayor Sugar's new open process, sort of an open door or boot him out the open door policy.
Well, now with this Metro Base fiasco, I don't think they have any reason to ever tell people they have to stay on topic ever again.
Yeah, you were talking about how you felt that the Brown Act was, shall we say, sadly, or let's say the public process requiring people to stick to topics that are, maintain discussion on the specific topic at hand, was ignored by Mayor Sugar in allowing Metro-based discussion, when in fact the real topic to your eyes was the moving of a stream.
Well, that's what was on the agenda, was the an appeal of a denial. See, the zoning board had denied Lipton the right to do that. And the zoning board is actually one of the only citizen commissions that there is that has any real authority. I mean, if they make a decision, that decision stands unless somebody appeals it to the city council. And that's what happened. Yeah. Lipton appealed to the city council.
And what happened? What did the council decide?
The council decided to let Lipton move the stream because they didn't see any connection between the stream relocation and the metro base.
The appeal was upheld.
The appeal was upheld.
On a 6-1 vote?
On a 6-1 vote.
With Sugar voting no.
Sugar voted no. He said he would vote for it if they included a 100-foot riparian setback on each side of the stream, because then that project could stand alone as a viable ecological improvement. But if you're, as proposed, it only had a 30-foot buffer, 15 feet on each side. Not what Sugar proposed would be 100 feet on each side, which would actually turn out to be a 200-foot buffer.
What cogent arguments did Catherine Byers make that led her to vote against Sugar's proposal?
She thought that it was arbitrary for the number to be 100 feet. Well, what happens if 92 feet is the real number that you want? Or 87 feet.
I see.
She didn't say, well, what about the proposal, which is 15 feet?
Right.
You know, nobody said, well, we'll meet you halfway, Keith, and give you 50 feet on each side of the stream instead of 15.
They said, we got the votes.
Right.
Go fish.
And basically, you know, most of the council members also talked off topic. They didn't talk about the stream. They spent most of their time talking about Metro Base.
Well, of course, they would claim that the metro base was really the key issue here, because that's why the stream was being moved.
Right, but see, the argument to allow the stream to be moved separately, you know, the environmental review process to happen separately from the metro base environmental review process, is that this is a standalone project that has nothing to do with the metro base. Because if it had anything to do with the metro base, you would have to include both projects together.
Well, then, since the topic obviously did include the metro base, isn't this the basis for a good lawsuit on this issue?
That's what I was telling the West Side residents. There's a group of people on the West Side and also environmentalists that has formed this group called SCRAM, which is Santa Cruz Metro Base. I don't know what it is.
Against
the metro base, but Santa Cruz residents against the metro base or something.
So there was also another topic that was on the agenda but was removed from the agenda, which some musicians were quite concerned about, and there had been some significant organizing done.
No, it wasn't removed from the agenda.
I thought it was, certainly wasn't on the evening agenda.
No, it was on the afternoon agenda.
Right, and I guess there was some concern that it had been removed from the agenda. Numerous people showed up at oral communications the evening. First of all, tell us what the issue was.
Okay, what the issue was is that for some months now, Christopher Crone, working with a number of mostly cafe and smaller club venue owners, has been working on this process to allow them to have live entertainment in their buildings without having to pay this outrageous entertainment fee. Which is over $1,700 for the first year you apply, then each year after that it's $1,200. Mm-hmm. And
That was currently how much they had to pay.
Right. And so what this law would have done is for venues under 100 people that didn't charge a door charge, where it was just tips, you know, you put out a tip
like
jar.
Like a coffee roasting company.
Right. You put out a tip jar and they play. Well, that was one of the places that was shut down temporarily.
Because I noticed they were open tonight.
Well, yeah, they did get an entertainment permit, in the meantime. Because last summer, our great public service officer, Lieutenant Patty Saponi, went around town and informed all of the cafes, restaurants, and clubs that didn't have entertainment permits that they would start being fined each night that they held a music event there without having a permit.
It's the law.
It's the law. Well, the fallacy there is that the police have been issuing entertainment permits. They're the ones in charge of this. The actual entertainment ordinance allows places to have live music till 2 in the morning. The police have been issuing permits to only 1 in the morning. So they're not following the law. They're changing the law to meet their own little repressive regime.
Are they requiring this like $1,200, $1,700 costs for the permits?
Currently, if you go in for a permit, you have to pay that. But once this law goes into effect in another 29 days or whatever it'll be.
So does that mean the coffee roasting company downtown paid $1,200, $1,700 to have these musicians play every week?
Yes, they do.
Sounds like extortion to me, man.
Right. It's ridiculous, you know, but
where does the money go to?
The police.
Oh, well, it's sort of a fundraising.
Right.
Sort of the Fraternal Order of Police fundraising.
Well, they claim it covers administrative costs.
Ah, yeah, that's like that $60 for a two-page police report. Right. I pick up on that. Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, so Christopher Crowe was working on just changing that portion of the law, the fee requirement, right, that certain businesses would be exempted from the fee based on size and not charging admission. Well, the first time he brought it to council, the council said, even though Patty Cipone had been at every one of these meetings that Crone held with the club owners and the cafe owners, she went up in front of the council and said, well, this should go to the city attorney and to the police for review before you actually do any voting on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happened. So it came back from the police a month later with a couple of changes that nobody liked. They took out the 2 o'clock, they changed the 2 o'clock ending of music to 1 o'clock. They said, well, that reflects what we've been doing. They've been violating the law by not giving people what the law says they're allowed to play to 2, but they've only issued permits that allow people to play till 1.
It's strangely reminiscent of what Chief Belcher did in 1995 when John Malkin of the Police Review Board revealed that Belcher had regularly been violating the city code and the state law by not referring all complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board, but referring some to his own internal affairs process and calling them inquiries. What did he do? Did he apologize? Did he release all these inquiries? Did he admit wrongdoing? No. He simply changed Directive C-7, which is the directive he had in his own department, which ex post facto legalized everything he'd been doing before and said he could now keep inquiries hidden aside and only send so-called serious complaints. Serious, of course, to be determined by the police department's judgment to the CPRB.
So the other thing they wanted to do, besides the 1 o'clock change, was to make it so that at 10 o'clock, when our noise ordinance goes into effect, that no noise could be coming from outside the building.
Does this include police sirens?
No. A building that had a venue where music was being played.
Mm-hmm.
Once it became 10 o'clock, if you were walking by in the street, you should not be able to hear that music. If you could, or if the police could, the police, without a complaint, the police would be able to go in and tell them to shut the music down after 10 o'clock.
Could we do the same thing with police sirens?
No.
Oh, dear. Okay.
But anyway, so that was, you know, those were the two main things that people were complaining about, the musicians and stuff. And so, anyway, what happened is because there was this big uproar in the musical community and also amongst all the club owners and stuff, Chief Belcher backed off on this and went and told Crone, well, just bring forward your fee elimination and don't even mention our stuff. Just, we won't even bring it back.
Let's not bring it up at this
time. And so that's what happened.
And what was your analysis of this? Was it properly handled, or do you think there should have been a firmer hand taken by the city council?
Well, personally, myself, I think Christopher should have strongly objected.
The Chief Belcher setting the agenda?
Right. The very first night when they did their first reading of this ordinance, Christopher should have strongly objected to any of that police changes being made. He had spent 6 months only working on the elimination of fees, and that was the only thing he was bringing forward. And to attach all this police stuff to it, he should have, you know, just said, oh, I'm going to table this until this gets removed, you know. But he didn't. And as it was, it created such a fury that the police actually begged him to remove it.
Well, actually, no, I spoke to Crone the evening before the city council meeting, and he was sort of... He had a number of things. He was talking about how his good work in dealing with the police department. And I said, what good work in dealing with the police department? You are afraid to be seen at a protest against Proposition 21. you hide half a block away, as you did when the youth and militants marched to the police station, I guess the week before the election. You said, oh no, I was at the town clock briefly. I said, yes, perhaps so, but you definitely and discreetly kept a distance from the mass of people who were listening to the protest at the police station. In fact, since Steve Argue was beaten by police the day after he appeared in a demonstration and a picture of his was a picture of him and you and Sugar were on the front of the second page of the Sentinel, you have essentially done nothing whatsoever around police department abuses, with a few exceptions, such as this endless crusade about the shoulder tap law, which, I mean, I certainly support that, but the amount of energy put into that, to me, first of all, it was too little too late. You didn't do any organizing publicly in any real way.
Right.
And when you did, you got Fitzmaurice on your side. If you'd done a little more, you might have gotten Byers, because she might have gotten spooked.
So.
Well, I mean, if it had been done publicly and loudly, she might have had to back down.
Right.
But, I mean, generally speaking, you know, I remember, like, at the beginning of Crohn's...
All right, well, listen, we're going to interrupt this this taped interview from several days ago with Scott Graham. We've been talking about Christopher Crohn, when who should call into the studio but the council member himself. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Robert. I called in because your associate called me to call in and maybe discuss this with you.
Sure.
Sorry I hadn't been listening. But I missed it, actually, if you're talking about the entertainment permit, because I think it's something that all Santa Cruzans should be very concerned about, you know, the ability to create an art form or a space, a public space for art forms such as music in our community.
Now, are we kind of at a, I know that you negotiated this for months and months, and kind of Scott gave a thumbnail sketch of how the police then tried to put restrictions on it that were successfully tabled the last council meeting. Are they likely to stay tabled?
I believe they are, but I'd also sort of like to continue our public discussion and somewhat untable them. I think all parties who've been working on this, I'm talking about the small venue owners as well as musicians as well as a couple council members, we kind of welcomed the respite because there was some information that got out. The way it got out, it said that, you know, venues are going to close at 10 o'clock and, you know, the sky was going to fall, but that was information that was not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So what we eventually passed was small venues who don't now have entertainment permits under 100 can now get them and be relieved of the fees, of the $700 fee, initial fee, and then $400 subsequently.
Well, I thought it was even more. Scott Graham said it was like $1,700 and $1,200. That's a mistake.
He might be referring to some other issues that we still have to talk about, which have to do with planning issues.
I see.
Which, you know, it just gets into, I don't want to say complexity, but it's more minutia of stuff and things that have been talked about in the past, and revisiting that takes a lot of time to get up to speed for all parties, including me and other council members.
Well, you spent a lot of time, according to Scott, kind of carefully working this out, and you kind of got, you know, what do you call it, slugged in the back with this sudden additions of stuff by the police department. Some have suggested it might be best to just let sleeping dogs lie, but you're suggesting it might be good to bring up these issues for further discussion. With what objective?
With the objective of having a firm seat at the table for our arts and music community. That right now, it's funny, once you scratch a surface, I had some people come to me about a ukulele player. They did a demonstration outside of city council chambers about 8 months ago because they couldn't play. They were denied access to So Say We Cafe. And so they came and played music outside the council chambers, and they didn't do it in a disruptive manner or anything like that, but council members had taken a break and wandered over to listen to them, found out that they, in fact, didn't have an entertainment permit. There were 60 people present, and a ukulele player couldn't play. I thought that was like, wow, what kind of community am I living in? That's not where I want to live. So we sort of, at that time, mounted an effort, mostly musicians, and said, look, we really want to change this. How can you help us? So entered into that process. And then as the process kept going forward, people came out of the woodwork. I mean, out of the woodwork, not in a negative way, out of the woodwork in a very positive way, because this had been their issue, but nobody had been talking about it. And so when it was on the agenda, so many people were interested in it. That's why I think it should continue, because, you know, the arts folks are usually meek or mild when it comes to politics, and I'd like to see them take a more active role in creating the kind of town we all want. And if the police have issues, we should discuss those issues without without innuendo, meaning pretending that there's, if there are alcohol problems or drug problems, let's deal with those. They're not music problems.
Well, I know that there's been a lot of concern around the catalyst and the fact that some have claimed that the police have claimed a lot of police calls, but then again, the calls are from the street and don't have anything to do with the catalyst. And there's been some concerns about...
Evidently, every call concerning the police goes to the ABC, the alcohol board of the state. It's a state entity, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ABC sanctioned the catalyst, but with information coming from, generated through our police department. And there was an agreement that was worked out between the owner of the catalyst and the ABC that they would suspend alcohol sales for 20 days, still play music, but... It'll hurt the business.
Mm-hmm. Jumping to a more controversial issue we talked about yesterday, Dolphin Lee, and actually just to jump one beyond that, there's been concern about the planning, or rather about the redevelopment agency in other cities. Scott Graham has been investigating and finds that there are citizen oversight boards, kind of like the commissions we have that oversee planning, that oversee zoning.
Yeah.
Would you be supportive of a commission to oversee the redevelopment agency?
Very supportive.
What chances does this have at City Council, and what do citizens need to do to make this a reality?
Well, I understood. What somebody has to do is go out and do some research. Sounds like Scott's doing that. And then maybe work with what's called our council analyst person, who maybe writes it up in an ordinance format, and then a council member or two brings it to the council and says why we need to do this. And then there's a discussion, and then the council directs staff on what it wants to do. So what it basically has to do is probably compile those ordinances that are in other cities, tailor it for Santa Cruz, give it to a council member, put it on the agenda, get people to come to the meeting and speak to it.
And now, of course, the hardest question of the evening, I know you're rushing off to the Doug Rand Memorial, where I guess folks will be able to perhaps find you.
Yeah, that's at 3 o'clock at Vets Hall, and it's going to be a sort of a day of celebration. If I can just say 30 seconds, Robert,
sure,
about
please,
that.
Please.
I know that you and Doug have had some go-rounds, too, over the years, but I think... the community is the better for it. And what's going to happen is at 3 o'clock is going to be on display sort of pieces of Doug's life that people have put together in a pictorial format. At 3:30, we're going to start a program with music and some speakers. At 5 o'clock, we're going to have a dinner. At 6 o'clock, we're doing all the things that Doug liked to do. Dinner, food, that is, march. We're going to have a march at 6 o'clock to the City Hall, where the mayor's going to read a proclamation. At 6:30, we're marching over to the collateral damage sculpture at the corner of Water and Pacific Avenue to hear from whoever members of the public would like to give testimonials concerning their life and Doug.
All this, of course, to be enclosed in Phil Oaks music, which I understand is going to be played along with other musicians like Mark Levy, who will be there. One of Doug's last and I feel most important...
Mark Levy, Aileen Vance, Mary McCaslin, whole bunch of singers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know Mark. The other ones are not so familiar to me, but I particularly love Mark's songs because he's written locally about a lot of things.
Right, right.
And Doug, I know, was a local activist. And that's really, I think, what really matters to me. I know Doug's last great work was in stopping the beach south of Laurel 3rd Street realignment at a time when a lot of people felt it was a done deal. You okay?
Yeah.
And I know that I feel, and I've said this publicly, he would have turned over in his grave if he saw what the current city council was doing with Dolphin Lee. Now, I
didn't appreciate that either.
Right. What they're doing with Dolphin Lee? Or
no, I didn't appreciate your invoking Doug's name in that situation.
Well, I honestly think that he would have felt as I do, and I think others who know him, like Scott Graham, agree with me. He was, in fact, shielded from all this for the last year of his life because there was a concern that any discussion of politics would affect his health.
Let me make a closing comment on this, because a lot of folks know where you're coming from on Dolphin Lee, and where I'm coming from on it is I really think it's extremely difficult to build affordable housing in not only Santa Cruz but all around the country. And what is being done here is an attempt by the council, albeit we might disagree on it, and I think it's open to discussion and debate, and people should weigh in on it. Is an attempt to build affordable units in the Beach Flats area. The concern, and I think rightly so, is relocation of people who currently live in those apartments known as Dolphin Lee apartments in the Beach Flats neighborhood. And what I think is that, and I think the council is very serious that nobody, if relocation plan doesn't work, the council's not going to vote for the project to go forward. and it's going to have to be patently clear to the council that this relocation program is going to go forward and work. And you and I, Robert, and some folks in the audience may agree or disagree, but this process is going forward. I am committed to having, if the plan goes forward, that people be relocated, everybody be relocated or given benefits. What I've sort of proposing or at least put forward in a couple different meetings was building units first, then relocating people into those new units, then rehabbing or completely reconstructing the building that currently houses that's on the premises of this property known as Dolphin Lake.
So are you thinking?
That's where I'm coming from.
So are you thinking of acquiring like more property, like some of the Seaside Company parking lots nearby, in which to build this housing?
I think the Pink Palace has always been something talked about in what's called the Pink Palace. Yeah. I cannot remember the address.
It's Rex Court. It is indeed.
Rex Court.
It's part of the Dolphin Lee project.
It is owned by by the Seaside Company. That's been in the mix the whole time. Right. Talking about, we've been talking about housing and a community center.
Where are we at in this process now? I mean, how far along is it? How reversible is it?
I think it's totally reversible because no money has been paid there's been no contract. The only contract the city has is with Mercy Housing, and they're our advisory and consultant on this. They come up with projects, the city council tailors it, community members input on it, and then it goes back to them with, yay or nay.
Mm-hmm. So you think that, I mean, even though this has
this
been...
This is going to be your last question and last comment, just because I really have to go.
Sure, and I appreciate you taking the time to call in on a busy day. This has been 7-0 up to now. There is a proposal being put before you. Julie Lee, I guess, gave it to you on Tuesday, which requests that the city demand that there be an ordinance from the city and the redevelopment agency that guarantees relocation, and also...
And she has a contract that she wants people that the city to sign with individual people. I have to get an opinion from the city attorney. I'm not opposed to the contract that she's proposing. I saw it. I'm not an attorney. I don't know what it puts the city into or what kind of relationship.
Sure.
So I need to hear from the city attorney. But
would you
I'm
be
in
willing
favor,
to vote against the project if the city refuses to
I'm
do
in
it.
Favor of such a of such stringent contractual, if that's where we have to go, mm-hmm. Methods of making sure that people do not get screwed over or screwed out of their homes. I got
to
go.
Let us talk to you more later.
All right, take care, Robert.
Thanks for calling in, Chris.
Sure. Bye-bye. Bye.
And that was Councilmember Christopher Crone. He gets a lot of heat from me on one day, and he shows a lot of spunk by coming back the next day and publicly presenting himself for examination and criticism. I want to give him credit for that. Of course, we didn't have much time to go into the details of this, and hopefully we will at some point in the future. Let's see what other members of the public have to say.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Yes.
Hi, this is Steve Argue.
Oh, my goodness. First we get a call from a council member, then we get a call from a man inside the Santa Cruz County Jail. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Wow. So, you're in jail, you're in your sixth month now inside?
Well, this is, I believe, actually my fourth month.
Fourth month, sorry.
And I've got three more to go.
So you have affordable housing, so to speak.
Well, it's pretty expensive, this is how this government chooses to house a lot of people.
And for those who don't know, you want to describe briefly why you are where you are?
Yeah. Well, there was a protest on May 22nd. We were protesting the U.S. bombing of Yugoslavia. We were protesting against Senator Sam Farr, who's a Democrat, who was supporting 100% the U.S. bombing and invasion of Yugoslavia going on. And we were protesting against him at a Democratic Party fundraiser. And the Santa Cruz police attacked our demonstration. A woman with a small child in her arms was being brutalized. I repeatedly told the cop to stop. It was Officer Lefevre, and he didn't stop brutalizing her. And I then used the force necessary to stop him. And I'm serving 9 months on a felony assault and battery of a police officer.
And in fact, you have probation awaiting you once you get off and all this sort of thing?
Yeah, 3 years probation. It's a joint suspended sentence, which means in that time, I'm out on the 3 years probation. If I violate any law, if I'm found to have violated any law, they can revoke the joint suspended and then give me 2 years and 3 months in San Quentin, in state prison.
Talk about the sword of Damocles hanging over your head. You also have been in organizing in jail in order order to, one, stop the brutality there. You were recently assaulted, as I understand it, by Deputy Zamora about a month or two ago.
Yeah.
You also were concerned about the fact that blankets, adequate blankets and food, are not being given to prisoners, and you were circulating petitions from around that issue?
Right. In fact, I have a petition right here, which I have 26 signatures on. It's just about everybody here in Unit A of the Santa Cruz County Jail. It says, we, the undersigned, demand adequate blankets for the inmates in Santa Cruz in the Santa Cruz County Jail to stay warm at night. Those of us in Unit A are only allowed 2 blankets. This is not adequate, especially for those of us in cells, which get colder than it does out on the floor. Those caught with 3 blankets are punished. There is no excuse for keeping inmates so cold at night they cannot sleep. This is a form of torture. We demand 4 blankets for all inmates in the Santa Cruz County Jail. And then there's another petition that has been circulated, which has 21 signatures on the drug war. And this is how this goes. We, the undersigned prisoners of Unit A of the Santa Cruz County Jail, demand an end to the war on drugs. No victim, no crime. U.S. prison labor is now a $41 billion a year industry. Drug laws serve to round up more slaves for America's modern plantations, the prisons. Meanwhile, the CIA imports cocaine and other drugs to fund their operations and numb the American people. Union labor cannot compete with people being paid 23 cents to $1.15 an hour. We call on unionists, students, and all socially concerned people to join us in demanding an end to the war on drugs and prisons for profit.
This is a particularly significant petition, I think, Steve, because it comes from people who are behind bars, and unlike most of us, people who sign this petition are subject to immediate kinds of sanctions. For instance, as I understand it, and I spoke to you this morning on a visit to you in jail, you yourself have been denied some privileges because you had a third blanket.
Yeah, they caught 3 of us with 3 blankets on Thursday, and they took away my commissary. Commissary is a way of buying additional food because they don't give us enough food, and people are forced to buy additional food, and then it's a punishment to take away commissary, and they did that for tomorrow's commissary. We won't be getting anything. We won't be able to get anything until Friday again.
You've also been kind of in touch with prisoners and different kinds of problems they've had, different kinds of injustices they've suffered. Anything new you want to acquaint us with?
Yeah. Actually, lunch is here right now.
Well, you want to go eat?
There's a guy here who wanted to talk about something, and I don't see him now. He was just here.
You want me to hold for him? I can hold for a bit if you'd like.
Okay.
So we're on the line with prisoner Steve Argue in the Santa Cruz County Jail, and you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Yeah, and there have been additional things in terms of my situation, too.
Go ahead.
There were problems when I first came in here of them serving me food with monosodium glutamate, which is something I'm allergic to. It's something that causes a lot of people problems. A lot of people don't even know it. It's been estimated about 5% of the population has problems from it. It's a chemical that's put in a lot of food, and a lot of the food here has it, and I'm allergic to it, and it makes me sick, gives me headaches, chest pains, makes me very sleepy, overall just not feeling well. My first 2 months in here, they refused to give me any kind of special diet without MSG, but as a result of me being beaten up, actually, and the attention that brought, and the protests and stuff that went on, the people calling in and complaining, the jail started doing some of the things that I was asking for, which included giving me an MSG-free diet. For a while, that was only a MSG, a diet with less MSG, because they were not including a whole number of ingredients labels that include MSG. But they just now, this past week, they've now included those as well. So I've finally gotten an MSG-free diet after 4 months in here. And other things have happened as well, where they were claiming that it was impossible to hook up the phone so that I could call my parents when attention was brought to what they were doing to me. That also was changed immediately. So there have been some things that have been changed as a result of public pressure on the jail here.
So protest works, is what you're saying.
Yeah. The attention, what people have done on my conditions has had an impact, and you know, we're hoping that you know, this demand for four blankets and also for more food, which is another petition that we circulated. If I could just quickly read that.
Sure.
As well. We got a lot of people to sign this as well. I sent this out like a couple weeks ago. It's, "We, the undersigned, demand adequate food for inmates in the Santa Cruz County Jail. Prisoners are currently kept hungry, with none given enough food, forcing those who can afford it to buy additional food. In addition, further punishments include revoking the ability to buy additional food, or also a special disciplinary isolation diet, as it's called, of bread and water. This is not just. Hunger should not be a form of punishment. We demand adequate food now."
Mm-hmm. Have you found that there are any tenants of the jail, prisoners, who are kind of eager to organize with you, or is this pretty much you doing a lone wolf effort?
Well, I mean, there's not too much to this organizing, circulating petitions and so forth, but there have been people who wanted to do more work when they get out. There was a guy from San Jose